Good afternoon, everyone. Like Matthew said, my name is Megan Sutherland. I attend Ohio State University, but I am also an employee of the National Science Foundation now, so it was a stepping stone into a small career. I have no information on grants, so please don't ask me. Okay, like Aaron, I was positioned in Worcester, Ohio. It is a very rural community. There's a large Amish contingent there. Basically, it's 30 miles from any of the larger cities, such as Canton or Massillon. It is a very large agricultural community, and so I was teaching at a vocational school, so I did not have the normal traditional student experience that most of my other fellows did. My classes were environmental biology classes for juniors and seniors, and a lot of them were on IEPs. An IEP is an individualized education plan. If students are having trouble learning, they meet with teachers, they meet with administrators, they meet with parents, and they all develop a plan that helps the students learn better in a classroom. My mission, as you all know, is to teach entomology to vocational students. So I have a background in education. I was an education major in my undergrad, and so I approach this from an educator's point of view. I had four basic steps when I was designing my lesson plans. And the first was, what is the most important concept in entomology? And I know it's very debatable as to what is the ultimate pinnacle of entomology, but I was trying to relate it more to the students' lives, what would affect them the most. I also tried to consider what was the best way to teach that concept. So, as I said before, students were on IEPs. I had to tailor the lesson plans to each student, so that way all of them would get the same knowledge and have the same opportunities to learn as the other students in the class. I did have students with some physical disabilities. One was in a wheelchair, another had walking sticks, and she was unable to traverse long distances. So I had to keep in mind that we needed to stay pretty much within the school grounds. We couldn't take field trips. So I came up with a 5-day plan. I went to my school once a week because unfortunately I lived in Columbus and I had a 100-mile commute to the school. So I could only go one day a week, and I chose Fridays because I thought the students would have more fun on a Friday. So on our first day, I tried to cover what is entomology. A lot of students know what bugs are, but they don't know what the study of insects and other arthropods would be. On day two, we just had fun with bugs. And days three and four, we covered the scientific method. Students basically learn the five steps in high school, especially in the vocational school, but they never get to implement the scientific method. So I tried to have them conduct an experiment that they could learn the scientific method in a hands-on manner. And finally, on day five, we were just having a really fun end-of-the-week activity. So I basically taught them natural selection with M&Ms, and that's going to be awesome when I show you guys that. And I also brought in all the previous concepts. So we covered scientific method, we covered entomology, we covered adaptation. All that was brought together on the last day as kind of the ultimate lesson. So as I said before, day one was the intro to entomology. Basically, I tried to tell them the difference between what insects and spiders are. Students don't know that spiders aren't insects. And so you kind of have to hammer that home before they'll actually start learning what an insect is, what are the different body parts, why are they important, why are they beneficial. I tried to focus on PowerPoints because you can use pictures, you can use movies, you can use charts, you can use everything in a PowerPoint, and students really respond well when there's active stimuli up on a screen. I tried to focus on background insects versus exotic insects. Ohio State has an insectary, and so I borrowed live specimens and brought them to the schools. And the kids really had fun shaking the Madagascar hissing cockroaches. That was their favorite thing that day. And then the most important thing was, why does entomology matter? A lot of people say science is stupid, why should we learn this, this is dumb. Those were the most common quotes I got from the kids. So you need to make it matter to them. You need to make it beneficial and relevant to their everyday life. So for the second day, I decided to make it fun. We went out and we did aquatic surveys. So the week before, they had learned what an insect was. They needed to know that not all scientists work in a laboratory. There's those of us who like to get out and get dirty. So the school that I was placed in has a stream that runs through the backyard. So we went to the stream and we used aquatic dip nets and other methods like kick nets and stuff. And we caught as many insects and other arthropods as we could. And then we brought them back to the school, and I had them identify them. And I gave them a handout that listed the basic orders of the insect world. And they were supposed to identify what they had caught based on those handouts. On day three, after they had learned what an insect is and how you identify an insect, we decided to delve into the scientific method. So for this, I decided to use pitfall trapping. Again, they could go outside. It was a really nice day. They wouldn't be caught up listening to PowerPoints or lectures. So I had them break into groups, and each group had to ask a question. So for those of you who may not know what a pitfall trap is, it's basically a cup that you put in the ground, and whatever falls into it is yours to keep and kill. And so each of these groups had to come up with a question. They each had two pitfall traps, so they had two cups, and they had to compare two different things. So some students put their cup near a water source, some put them under a tree versus out in a field, and they had to write a hypothesis. So they had to say, I will catch more beetles by the stream than I will in the top of the tree, or I will catch more beetles under the tree than I will out in the middle of a field. So we went back the next day, because this was a two-day experiment, and we emptied the pitfall traps, and students calculated how many beetles they had caught, because beetles are really easy to count, and they're very recognizable. So the students, it was very easy for the students who had trouble maybe figuring out what the insect would be. And so they analyzed their results, but unfortunately we couldn't use statistics. A lot of the students, again on their IEPs, did not have a lot of math knowledge. So we just focused on which one had more. I'm sorry, there's a lot of writing on this slide, but some important considerations that my teacher and I had to think about when we were coming up with our scientific process was we needed to relate the scientific method to the students. So when we taught them the scientific method, we used the analogy of running a red light. And if you guys don't know what that is, I'll tell you after. Second, they need to think outside the box. I did not want to use handouts. I did not want to use lectures. I wanted hands-on active activities that these kids could use to keep them focused on the task at hand. So we didn't do essays, we didn't do multiple choice, there were no worksheets. It was basically what they observed, and they told us their results from that. The third was to let them decide. So when I said that I let them write their own hypotheses, that was them making their own decisions, so they could back up what they thought was possible. And finally, to test their knowledge, I let them design that experiment and they explained their reasoning. And for those of you who may want to use this, you might want to talk to the math department and have them do statistics at the same time that you're running an experiment, and they can help the students with the math aspect of this. And finally, day five, we did natural selection. I called it my M&Ms in the Jungle project. So basically, you take a really pretty, really colorful piece of fabric and you throw M&Ms on it. And each student gets a quote-unquote adaptation. For those, I used salad tongs or spoons or tweezers or something. And the students had to catch the M&Ms. So first they would turn their backs to the table, and then I would tell them to turn around, and then they would try to catch as many M&Ms on the jungle print or on the flower print or whatever as possible. And the students really had fun with this. As an added incentive, whoever caught the most M&Ms got a prize. You have to be careful. Some of the students get out of hand, so you need to make sure that your teacher is taking care of the trouble students. And then we related it back to the scientific method again. So we had them write out a hypothesis. We had them write out the question. We had them come up with what they thought the results would be and why. And then why their utensil didn't catch as many as Bob's, who was standing next to him. And the students really had a lot of fun with this, and it related it on a level that they could understand. So rather than saying that, you know, wolves up in the Arctic eat all the rabbits, that them attacking the M&Ms was more fun and would stick out in their minds a lot more. So some key concepts that you need to use when you're teaching non-traditional students is you need to relate it to their world or neighborhood. So when I gave them lectures, I talked about what went on in Worcester. I talked about the dirty watershed. I tried to say when the dairy farms let all the milk and all the nastiness sludge into the river, it's affecting you. You need to combine all the different learning styles. So students learn in many different ways. Some learn from hearing, some learn from seeing, some will only learn if they're moving while they're doing it. So you need to make sure that all your lessons incorporate all of those different learning styles so your students have an equal opportunity to gain some knowledge. I wrote that you should use both native and exotic species. A lot of the books that students get when they're in high school or middle school talk about things that are outside their sphere. So you need to talk about things that are in their backyard, or you need to talk about things that are happening now, the exotic species that are coming in and taking over from all the native species. Let them create the experiments, so focusing on letting them run the show, well, letting them think they run the show is probably the best thing to do when you're a scholar in the classroom. Make it fun, do group work, have them divide and conquer. If you pair a student who has trouble learning with a student who's very good and very knowledgeable about the subject, they can teach each other. And finally, show them that insects are not gross. The first thing that happened when I put the picture of the cockroach on the screen was everybody goes, "Ew, that's so gross." So you have to show them that insects aren't disgusting, that everything about an insect has a purpose, and that butterflies aren't the only pretty ones out there. Okay, so I would just like to thank Dr. Moore, the PI, and to Lois Grant, and my teacher, Dr. Nestor, to Aaron, who helped me when I was having trouble, and to the National Science Foundation for giving me a job and for giving me the opportunity to be a fellow. And if you have any questions at all, I put both my email addresses down there, so you're more than welcome to email me, and I can send you lesson plans and answer your questions. Yeah, over there.
I have a question about your natural selection thing. I've seen other kind of lessons on natural selection in the MS where you put on like different color pieces with blocks, and then you have to see how things get off, and then if you can see selective pressure going towards like the green MS are better at hiding than the green blocks, they have to talk to that. Do you incorporate that into your lesson? Talk about like what you use that part, or is it done?
Okay, so you're asking, do I incorporate greater concepts like camouflage or mimicry into the lesson?
Well, the concept of natural selection, as you know, you take the image off and then you see like how many of them, you don't have equal numbers of all the same colors in the image, so
some of them are funny enough to see part of that. Okay, I don't know how to phrase that, so I'll just give an answer. So we started off with an equal number of each color, and then I let them, it was whatever they saw first, they would go after. So on the print that I had, it was just like some random jungle print I picked up in the clearance section at Joann Fabrics. And whatever they saw first, they would try to grab. But if they couldn't grab it, they could go after another color if they saw another color. So it was just natural selection in a way that relate to the students so they could understand adaptations. Maybe natural selection was the wrong title for the project, but yeah.
So was that timed then? Is it 5 seconds of collectivization, then 5 seconds or something like that, or what?
So was their timing? Yes. They had 30 seconds to collect as many as possible. Yes.
I think what you're trying to get at was that, were you looking at the adaptation as the utensils that you gave the students as being part of the selection, or were you looking at how they're choosing the M&Ms or what M&M color is left as a selection? In other words, are they selecting the M&Ms?
Okay, so were they selecting for the adaptation or selecting for camouflage or color and stuff? It was kind of both. I left it up to the students to decide at the end whether or not it was the adaptation of the utensil or if it was the color that was affecting the number of M&Ms they got or how many of the M&Ms they got. I was just trying to give them as many options as possible where they could come up with some sort of answer on their own. What was the age group? It was juniors and seniors, so basically between 16 and 18 years of age, and I think there was a 19 and 20-year-old thrown in there.
Because I find that it makes a huge difference in how you present things, whether they're second or third graders versus beyond that stage of, say, fifth graders, that they become this closed adult mentality. And with that question, there's one thing that constantly comes up is that first statement you had is, how they don't think that insects are important at all. They can't relate to us. So this brings up the question, has anybody ever asked them, what is important to you in your life? Because it seems to me there's almost nothing of significance that's important in many of the people of that age group today in our society, in this country.
So you're asking what they think is important in their lives?
Has anybody asked them that to see if it's more than just iPods and stuff on TV?
I didn't personally ask them what's important in their lives. Because just listening to their conversations with each other and with the teachers and randomly in the hallways, you can kind of get a sense that the outside world doesn't matter to them. It's all about them. It's their lives. It's, you know, the world revolves around them. So I tried to make all of my lessons and everything I taught relate to them, something that directly has an impact on them. So, you know, for example, the red light project. What happens to you if you run a red light? Like, that was kind of what I was going for, was what happens to you if all the praying mantids die out? What happens to you if you get bitten by a scorpion, or stung by a scorpion, that sort of thing. Yes?
One question related to your current position. What are you doing with the National Science Foundation, and how do you think your experience at GK-12 helped?
Okay, so what is my current position at the National Science Foundation, and how did the GK-12 program get me into it? When I was interviewing, they asked me what I knew about the National Science Foundation, and I told them about my experience with the GK-12 program and everything I had done as a fellow, and I told them that I was interested in trying to provide an opportunity for graduate students to get fellowships and to go out and teach everyone and teach the layperson about insects and teach them about science and biology. And I think that had a good impact on them, because all of the people who work at the National Science Foundation as program officers are scientists in the field. They are doctorates and PhDs who come in, and they're the ones who decide the grants. But I think they wanted me to have some sort of experience working with people, because my position is a science assistant in the Division of Environmental Biology. And so I have to work with people who call the National Science Foundation and say, there's something weird in my backyard, can you tell me what it is? Or professors who call and say, I want to get a grant, how do I get a grant? So working with everyone from, you know, the PIs to working with students, to working with parents and teachers, it gave me the knowledge and the ability to handle people at the National Science Foundation from those walks of life when they come up and they have questions. Okay, so did I just get thrown into this willy-nilly? No. Our PI, Dr. Moore, had us go through several trainings where we learned about stream ecology, where we learned about teaching. We met with community members the summer before we started. We met with our teachers. We discussed lesson plans. We discussed what route it should go. We discussed our role in the classroom. I finished in June, but I know that the new fellows in our program have had more training on how to do lessons. We're not acting so much as teachers. We don't do grading. We don't have to write the lesson plans and submit all that stuff that the state of Ohio, the Department of Education, requires. But we just come up with ideas and ways to teach the science, and the teachers are the ones who back us up and to tell us how to do it.